Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jacob Daniel here, episode 88 of the Daniel 3 podcast, back after a long hiatus. I've had some stuff going on and I'm going to get back into a routine here. I got a lot of stuff to talk about, both things going on with the channel, things going on with me personally, and then things that I just want to talk about in the ever-growing crazy world around us. I will start out with my sponsor, who I don't have a bottle of wine to use as a prop, as usual. But as always, Will Bell, a good friend of mine, and definitely go check out rabbiteyewine.com for all your blueberry wine needs. Support a libertarian small business. So I wanted to get that out of the way. Obviously, if you wanted to keep up to date with what's going on with the podcast and just the things that I'm doing, there's a few different ways to do that. Daniel318.com is a good way to keep up with the podcast and any updates. Obviously, my Twitter handle at Biblical Anarchy. You know, every once in a while, David, I'll put the comment up here. Every once in a while, you got to do a reset. Oh, crap. Hopefully you guys can still hear me, because apparently when I put that comment up, it froze. Okay, I'm back. Hopefully that didn't do anything in the stream. But yeah, sometimes you got to do like a nice reset of the beard. So this is definitely not my look. You broke my stream. So I had to, I think I'm clipping a little bit there because, you know, I haven't been podcasting in a while. All my equipment was just like powered down and packed up, and I had to kind of reset all the lights and everything. So it's, I didn't have much of a chance to test it out, but it's all good. Daniel318.com, at Biblical Anarchy on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook. I just go by my actual real name on there, Jacob Daniel Winograd. I got to put the middle name in there because nobody knows my name. So I just figure if Jacob and Daniel and Winograd are there, covers most of the bases so that people can find me. So I guess I'll start out with just stuff going on with me personally and kind of why I've been all over the place. I mean, obviously, back in May, my wife had our fourth child. And so I had a little bit of a break from the podcast during that time, which, you know, makes sense. You know, whenever you're wife gives birth, it's kind of good to take some time off. But, you know, this was our fourth child and her fourth giving birth to one of our children within a like 7-year span. So pregnancy takes a lot out of a woman's body. And so I needed to make sure that I was, putting my family first and putting her first and being there to serve her as a husband, serve our family as a father during that time. And then a complication from the pregnancy, my wife developed a blood clot, which is something that can happen as a complication of pregnancy. And that's been a bit of an adventure, just trying to get her healthy again, because she was having all these weird symptoms. And so we were going to the doctors and having all these tests done and trying to figure out what was going on, because she was having just these weird pains and like these tingling feelings. And sometimes she was like having like these like tremors and shaking, and it was just a bunch of things, and they would kind of come and go. And we'd go to the doctors and they didn't really think of a blood clot, because that's something that you typically see in someone who's older. My wife is only 30, as am I. And so it took a while to figure out the problem, but thankfully they have found the problem. She's on a treatment plan now. The treatment itself has taken a lot out of her, and so it's just been one thing after another in our household. But luckily we seem to be getting through the other side of it, and there's been things going on in the background that I've been working on with the podcast, because you know, if you're not, it's kind of like in business, you know, if you're not growing, if you're not expanding, then if you're just kind of sitting still, then you're just not going to be successful in what your endeavor is going to do. We have to always be, it's kind of like that biblical, idea, like go forth and multiply. And obviously that's about children, but I think in everything we do, we're supposed to do it unto the Lord, and we should try to continue to improve and continue to find ways to get better at our craft and seek to put our skills and talents and giftings out there in the way that God intends us to. So I've had a lot of fun on the doing this podcast for the past 87 odd episodes and countless other appearances on other people's podcasts, and it's been a very educational, very enriching experience. And I really didn't know what I was doing when I set out. You know, I just kind of was like, I knew that I had things that I wanted to talk about with other people, and I knew that there were ideas that I wanted to flesh out that were going to be better done in a podcast format. I mean, one of the things that I remember really taking away from watching and consuming the like hundreds of hours of Jordan Peterson lectures and interviews and conversations and his books and stuff is that, you know, conversations are sort of, you know, what we and free speech in general is not just something that you need for like, you know, personal liberty. And obviously it's important to have freedom of speech for personal liberty and to be able to criticize the government and to be able to criticize corporations and businesses and individuals, etc. But it's also like, you know, trying to work out problems in your head just isn't enough. We need to be able to, you know, whether it's through writing, whether it's through conversations in real time, or whether it's through podcasting or formal debates and etc. I think these are conversations in these different formats are ways in which we work out problems, ways in which we grow and learn as human beings. And so this podcast has really helped me to crystallize, you know, a lot of things in terms of my theological beliefs, helping me to grow stronger in my faith in God and in Christ and diving deep into the Bible. It's also helped me learn how to do a podcast. You know what I mean? I learned more of the production side of things and sort of learned a little bit of what works and what doesn't work. Learned to network a little bit. And, I think on top of that, you know, I tried to, you know, one of the things I value as a Christian, as a libertarian, is consistency. And I feel like when I started out on this journey, that, and I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but I feel like when I started out on this journey, I was like, I had a lot of different hats. It was like who I was as a father and who I was as a husband, gosh, it's 2022. I can be a wife if I want to be. Don't get on my case. Who I am as a husband, who I am as a Christian, and like who I was as a libertarian and my political beliefs. These things were not integrated. I wasn't like one whole person. Rather, I had all these kind of different buckets or different hats that I would wear, and I'd have to change the costume I was wearing depending on the context that I was in. And that wasn't so much like a conscious, like intentional choice. It was just because that I didn't have like one unified theory of being and of belief, you know. And this podcast has helped to integrate all of that to where, you know, who I am as a person is informed by my religious beliefs, and my religious beliefs, I can draw a straight line from my religious beliefs into my political beliefs, and I no longer feel like I have to kind of like shift into these different personas anymore. Rather, I feel like, you know, I mean, and not that I've achieved any kind of level of perfection, and not that I don't still have, you know, more to learn and more room to grow, because I believe that we're always doing that. But I think I have a foundation in which, you know, I've built the house upon a steady foundation, and now it's ready for doing the work that God wants me to do and to build even more on top of that foundation. And I feel like it's a solid foundation rather than, you know, kind of the shaky ground I think that I was maybe starting out on, because I didn't have, you know, that sort of, you know, foundational consistency across all those different spheres, you know, personal life, religious life, and sort of like political beliefs, and having those in the right order. So that's all very important. And so, you know, and I don't want to just be another libertarian podcast. You know, I want to bring something to the table that brings value to the people who come and listen to me speak. You know, I mean, I don't need to go out there and be, you know, a worse version of Scott Horton, or a worse version of Dave Smith, or a worse version of Jose Galison. You know what I mean? It's like I need to either figure out a way to be Jacob Daniel or Jacob Winograd or whatever my name is, and to bring a unique perspective and unique information and unique value to people from the work that I do. And so, part of what I've been doing in this hiatus, aside from taking care of my wife and my family and kind of getting my house in order, is trying to figure out like what the next step of the podcast is. Because up until now, I'd say like 95% of the episodes and the content that I was producing has been interview form, where I bring someone on the show and I either have a conversation with them about something we find to be, you know, mutually interesting or mutually of value, or maybe something that we disagree on, or I'm interviewing them because they're an interesting person and I want to, you know, have them on my show. Sometimes it's, you know, if I have Dave Smith on my show, it's because it's like, you know, he's a very popular voice in our movement, and I'm hoping to, you know, have him on my channel to bring something to the sort of like audience that I have and the sort of, you know, flavor of, you know, libertarian podcasting that I try to do. But obviously, you know, someone like that, you know, coming in who has a much bigger platform and reach in history than I do, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just I don't want that to be all that I do. And I kind of fell into a habit of doing that week after week. And not only is that, I think at some point I felt like I was a one trick pony, and I felt like I was too dependent on just trying to get other people on my show to say things rather than just putting out the content and the things that I wanted to say. But also it's like, I think there's something about, doing that. That's sort of like, it's one thing at the beginning to do that, to help, you know, kind of grow my reach and whatnot. And to, those conversations were, again, like I was saying before, useful for helping me to figure out how to connect all these pieces in the correct way. But now that I've done that, I feel like I can't just keep doing the same thing. You know, there has to be a transition, and I'm still going to have people on the show and do those kind of episodes, but I want to be able to go deeper into a lot of the topics that I want to talk about and not feel like I have to have somebody on in order to do those topics. So the next phase of this project that I've kind of put together is in the works. I can't unveil it completely yet, though. So and I'm not trying to do this as like a gotcha where it's like I'm like stringing people along, because like I don't, that's not my intention. But just because it hasn't been formalized yet, and I mean, it's kind of been formalized in the background, you know, the sort of like transition that's going to happen here, but it's not ready to be unveiled yet. It'll be soon, though. November 11th, I can say, is the date that I will be able to come out and basically announce what changes are happening. So definitely, I mean, this, I will say, you know, just to be clear, this stream, this channel is not going away. So it's not like you're going to, miss out on this or have to go, unsubscribe from this or whatever. I definitely want you to stay tuned in here, because I'm going to keep this going. But I guess the most I will let slip is that this is no longer going to be the only spot that you're going to see me on. So I'll leave it at that. Definitely be staying tuned. I'm going to do a few more live streams and episodes between now and then, that'll kind of transition this podcast into what I want it to be going forward. If you stay tuned, you'll be able to see the announcements and stuff. And in the link of this video after, I don't have the link yet, but after this is done being streamed, and I can go back and edit it, I'm going to put into the comment section a link that you can use to go to my website and sort of subscribe to be ready for the next thing that's coming. You know, I'm very excited for that. It's a very big thing that I've been working on for the last couple months, and I'm really, really excited to share this with you guys once that time comes, because it's going to be, again, kind of like I'm saying, it's going to be a way that I can expand the, I think, good foundation I've already built here, and to be able to take that next step into doing more work in trying to push out the sort of like, you know, Christian libertarian message that I've been trying to push out there. So I'll leave it at that, and definitely stay tuned, and the those announcements and updates will be coming down the pipeline, so to speak. Anyway, let me see. You guys were talking a little bit, so I'll see what what you all were saying, because I can't read and talk at the same time. Audio good. How many kids do you have now? If it's 5+, you get a free pass into Catholicism. I'm at 4, so I'll have to work on that 5th. Although I don't know if I don't know if my wife is on board for another one after some of the complications she's had after this one, but we might be taking a break for the moment, but whatever's in God's plan for us is what's going to happen. And we love kids. I mean, we were kind of thinking about waiting a few years to have a 5th one. I think she's a little bit less keen on it now, but like I said, you don't know what the future holds. So, And I appreciate the prayers. Like I said, she's doing a lot better now, but it was definitely rough when we didn't know what was going on. So we're definitely at least happy with, you know, and the clot's still there, and she's on blood thinners and stuff that are going to break it up, and that could take anywhere from a few weeks to a few months or more. So, let's see, do a Bible reading. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's something that would be interesting to do, is to maybe, I like that kind of thing. I don't know if a Bible reading is a great podcast. You know, that is something I've considered, and I guess people can let me know what their thoughts are. You know, I do have a Patreon. You know, if you go to patreon.com/biblicalanarchy, if you want to subscribe, you know, one of the perks I've considered doing, you know, because a lot of people will do like private Zoom calls or chats with their Patreon supporters. And, you know, that was something I was considering doing, was, you know, if I built up big enough of a group of private supporters, is, you know, doing a, you know, sort of like Bible study behind the scenes that we could record for ourselves, maybe. But I don't know if that's something I would necessarily want to do as content, just because, like, when you, it's one thing to have a conversation about big picture ideas, or to pick like a topic that you've sort of, you know, maybe a section of the Bible that you've kind of researched and done careful exegesis on, and you want to talk about in a podcast form. But a Bible reading, I mean, on one hand, it's like, if I'm just reading it, not adding my own commentary, I don't know. If I was going to have a couple people on and do, you know, because I know, like, Jose and Caleb and other people, they'll do, like, the live readings of different books. Now, I've considered doing live readings of some Christian libertarian literature. That might be something I do down the road. But live readings of the Bible, I think, you know, generally you want to do that in more of a Bible study sort of fashion. And I don't know if that would be the best content for a podcast, because you don't want to, sometimes when you're in a Bible study, like, it's a bit of a journey. And when you're studying scripture, because I have such a high view of scripture, I don't want to necessarily, like, I don't know. It's sort of like, what's that saying? Like, people don't want to know how the soup is made. It's like, and, you know, sometimes you have those awkward moments along the way in a Bible study where people are, you know, exploring different things and trying to understand something. And I don't know, it could be good content, or maybe it would just be a good, you know, a good sort of community building thing for supporters. If I get enough people that would be interested in doing that. So, I don't know. I mean, it's something I'll definitely think about. I definitely also would like to do some live readings of different Christian libertarian literature. You know, there's like the letters by C.S. Lewis. There's letters from J.R. Tolkien about his thoughts on government and anarchy. You know, and there's stuff C.S. Lewis has written as well. You know, writings from Christian anarchists in the past, you know, that they would be cool to go into. The Kingdom of God is Within You, and like Tolstoy. I mean, there's so many people that you could go back and do readings of, either their personal writings or things that they, you know, fiction or nonfiction things they've written. So, you know, those are things I definitely think will be part of the channel at some point. You should read Volume 1, Rothbard's History of Economic Thought. Volume 1. I've never read that. I'm still trying to get... I'm reading The Progressive Era. That's what I'm currently reading out of Rothbard. So maybe when I finish that, I will look into... I have so many books. I don't have my bookcase behind me anymore, but I have so many books that I want to read, and I have so little time to read. Most of my time reading is like late at night, and I have like either the baby or the second youngest like asleep on my shoulder, and there's very little light in the room, and I'm like trying to, you know, get my phone light or like the light from the kitchen to just shine on the book correctly and and get a few pages in. It's It's real tough, and I'm really bad about, I can listen to a podcast while I'm working all day long, but audiobooks are just, man, they're so hard to listen to while I'm working. I can do them when I'm driving, but I have a somewhat long commute, but while I'm working, it's hard for me to listen to an audiobook and to retain what I'm listening to. But yeah, definitely lots of stuff that I want to read, and there's definitely, you know, that's something I'm going to want to do too, is have people submit things to me that they want me to react to, whether it's things by Rothbard or things by Christians. It could be like libertarian pieces. It could be things within the world of Christianity that people have written that perhaps, you know, I should do an episode on and respond to. And I kind of got this idea from listening to Dave Smith, and like he does this thing all the time where people will attack libertarianism, and he'll take their articles or their podcast segments and he'll, you know, basically just like, you know, crap on them for 45 minutes to an hour and kind of like tear apart all their arguments. And so I thought about doing that, but more, you know, on the Christian libertarian thing. I want to go back. It's a bit old, but I remember when Michael Knowles of the Daily Wire had Michael Malice on to go over the Anarchist Handbook, and they got to like Tolstoy, and you know, Tolstoy just wasn't somebody that Knowles was going to really respect as, you know, from a theological perspective. And I thought about going back and trying to debunk some of the things Knowles said there in terms of criticizing Christian anarchism. So that kind of content are things I'm definitely I don't have anything actively planned, but there's things that are on my mind that I definitely want to do. What are my top five favorite books? Okay, so this is tough because it's like, do you go fiction or nonfiction or mix the two? And it's kind of like evaluating books is so different because, like, you know, the criteria for fiction versus nonfiction is so different. And so maybe, I don't know if I'll do both. I guess for fiction, I mean, I'm definitely, I mean, Lord of the Rings trilogy, and also, let's see, The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, you know, definitely in terms of fiction, those books are near the top. This is funny. I remember, like, growing up, Harry Potter was such a, like controversial thing within the evangelical world, but I really like the Harry Potter series. Even though the first few books are geared more towards children, but they do mature as the series advances. And I can't help but just see all of the Christian imagery and Christian mythology that's just baked into J.K. Rowling's universe there. Now I know, you know, later on that it's like, I try to just take it as it was written. I kind of deny the whole, like, post hoc Dumbledore is gay, and I don't really pay attention to Hollywoodization of the series and the movies and the Fantastical Beast series and all that. If you just take the original seven books as they were written and, you know, don't get weighed down by the some of the things that try to get added on later to it. There's a lot there that I think is great. Let's see, other fiction books. I really love it. It's a kind of an obscure book, but the author probably isn't that obscure. Frank Peretti. I remember reading like every Frank Peretti book that existed growing up, and he's a kind of like a pretty popular Christian fiction author. He kind of writes sort of like Christian, I wouldn't say it's Christian horror, but it's kind of like, it's kind of close to that. It's like the things he writes are like, you know, people who are confronting things that are like either explicitly or borderline demonic, but, you know, the people who cling to Christ or the people who find God in their experiences or overcoming what's going on. And so there's a lot of Frank Peretti books I love. I remember the book called The House I think is one of my favorite fiction books of all time that he wrote. And then if I'm going to pick a fifth one, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a fifth fiction book. What's the name of the book? There was a book, The Blue Sword, another fantasy, but I was huge. Most of the fiction I read is fantasy. So that's the only other fantasy book I remember reading and really getting into. There's a lot out there that I love, but those are the five that first immediately came to mind. With nonfiction, it's going to be obviously mostly libertarian stuff. Although not all of it. I would say 12 Rules for Life is definitely one of my favorite nonfiction books of all time. You know, I haven't liked Jordan's new book as much as his first one, to be completely honest. The 12 More Rules and the Antidote to Order or whatever it is. Beyond Order. I mean, it's not bad. I haven't finished it yet. I got like a third way through it. It just wasn't as captivating as his first book. But 12 Rules for Life is a fantastic read that's not explicitly libertarian, but I think has a lot of implicit, you know, Christian and libertarian truths embedded within it. And then, obviously, I guess, I've read For a New Liberty, and Anatomy of the State. Beyond trying to think, not just going Rothbard over and over again. I haven't read Human Action, but I read the one that Murphy did that's like a summary of it. Choice. Yeah, Choice is a good one. There's a good... What's the name of the book? I can't think of the name of this other book, but Faith Seeking Freedom by the Libertarian Christian Institute. That's what... It's a really short book, but it's kind of like... Imagine Anatomy of the State, but the Christian version. almost. And so that's a really good... really good read as well. I don't know if that's five, but that's close enough. I mean, there's so much out there. There's one I'm reading right now, and I can't think of the name of the title. But it's something, what is it? It's something like Biblical Authority After Babylon, After Babel, sorry. Which is a really interesting read. And the book's kind of like two-tiered. Like the, part of the book is sort of a Protestant defense. It's sort of like a very thoughtful Protestant going, hey, the Protestant Reformation and the fruits of it kind of suck. And we have to, if we're going to not be Catholics, we need to contend with that. So part of it is that, but part of it's also kind of like a very refreshing, biblically, so far it seems very biblically based, exploration of what the Bible says about authority, what biblical authority and what godly authority looks like. And I'm not the whole way through it yet, so I can't give a complete review of it. But so far it's a pretty thoughtful read. So I'll definitely, when I'm finished reading that, maybe go into that, cause there's a lot there. Book recommendation, Religious Freedom in a Secular Age by Michael F. Byrd. Okay. I'll have to look into that. So let me take a drink here. I'm still getting over a cold here, so y'all have to excuse me while I mute my mic and blow my nose, because otherwise I'm going to start. it's going to get hard for me to speak. Give me... All right, that's better. All right, so... if you guys have any more questions or comments, keep them coming. I'll try to keep responding, throughout the stream. I'm going to go for another 20, 25 minutes here. But there's definitely a lot that's happened over the last, month, 2 months that I've kind of been taking my hiatus on that I've wanted to get into and talk about. So And kind of what I'm going to do here is actually go back. I'm pulling up my Twitter profile here. I'm going to go back and sort of jog my memory and look at the things that I've retweeted or responded to, because a lot of it are things that I haven't been able to go super deep on that I want to go super deep on. So let me give this a minute while it loads. One thing that comes to mind while this is loading is Tulsi Gabbard. And man, that's been, the whole thing with Tulsi Gabbard has been really interesting to watch unfold, because like there's part of me that like really, really, really wants to identify with Tulsi, because she reminds me of me when I was on the left. And I've seen some people say she's not very principled, and it's like, well, I mean, other than libertarians, who is really principled? I mean, not to toot our own horns, but like a lot of people are, you know, they're not ideologically based in terms of like, or I mean, they're ideologically based, but they're not like, their ideology doesn't stem from sort of like a first principle approach that I think something like libertarianism does. So yeah, I mean, people on the left, on the right, tend to be very unprincipled and very, fair weather in terms of, you know, their views kind of changing by what is expedient or what is politically advantageous at the time. But there's something about Tulsi, just her personality and just like the way that she's kind of been like the outcast among the left. And that's how I kind of always felt when I was on the left. You know, I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and even there I didn't perfectly fit in, you know, just because I felt like I did want to have that consistency, and, you know, I guess this was at the time, I didn't realize that this was like the inner libertarian in me, but I didn't want to just go along with like blind party allegiance. I actually wanted to stand on principle. And I get the criticism that Tulsi doesn't have principles, but I've always felt like Tulsi has a couple core moral principles that she's always wanted to stand by and that have caused her to sort of clash against the establishment, especially on the Democratic side, but including Republicans as well, that she's gone toe-to-toe with. I know some people are really hard on her right now because of that, and I forget the guy's name, the endorsement of the Republican in New Hampshire, and I've listened to Reed's take on that, and I know he intends to try to ask her about it. I don't think that's happened yet, to my knowledge. But it's definitely, it's definitely frustrating. I really hope that the endorsement is some kind of oversight, or that there's something there that we're not seeing, because I really want to believe that Tulsi is somebody that is trending towards us, and that we, you know, can represent, you know, I guess not a good Democrat anymore, but even if she doesn't become a libertarian, just be another one of those people, kind of like a Jimmy Dore or a Glenn Greenwald, who just, you know, represents what the left should be. Like, if there are going to be people who are not libertarian, and you're going to have something like a good leftist, you know, people like Tulsi, in my mind, you know, should carry that torch. And I really want to support her in that endeavor, and it's really frustrating. I'm trying to be charitable, but it is definitely a little bit perplexing, that endorsement. See, someone asked, in your opinion, what will abortion laws look like in 5 years? Yeah, that's, oof, man. I don't know. You know, I'm optimistic that to some extent we're going to end up a bit more like Europe. I think Roe being overturned has helped to stir up a deep analysis of what the legal bedrock of this issue is. And like,
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
What laws were on the table and what laws should be on the table. And, you know, obviously as an anarchist, I don't really... I tend to butt heads with some of the pro-life libertarians because I tend to be just... I mean, I'm as pro-life as it gets... And I'm really sympathetic to the pro-life minarchist or even the pro-life anarchist who says, like, listen, you know, the state sucks at everything, but I can't be content with the state doing nothing on the issue of abortion. I'm sympathetic to that. I'm so black-pilled on the government effectively solving anything that I'm just not able to really get motivated to fight that battle and to be optimistic about the legal system being part of the actual solution to the issue of abortion. That said, if there's going to be a legal system and it's going to involve with abortion, I feel no conflict in chiming in on what I think is better or worse in that sphere. And I'm hoping we end up a bit more like Europe where, you know, I think what people didn't realize is that really in America, across the states, even the states that people think abortion's heavily regulated, like, it's really not. That's true both before and after the repeal of Roe. And really in Europe, there's a lot more laws on the books regarding abortion than there are in a lot of the states here. You know, it's pretty much unheard of and impossible in a lot of European countries to have an abortion before, after 15 weeks. Excuse me. Which obviously in a moral sense, that's still a problem for me. I don't celebrate that there's abortions happening before the 15-week mark. But at the same time, that's a lot better than a lot of places here where it's very unrestricted up to even 40 weeks or beyond. So I'm kind of hopeful that we're going to have a bit of, like, decentralization, which I think will be good. But I think it's going to have to... At some point, like, people are going to cave into the admission that, like, just abortion on demand at any point in that 40-week period is just, like, there's no consistent pro-choice argument for that that doesn't just, like, really just become depraved. I mean, I can distinguish between someone like, I remember, like, Dave Rubin is someone on the right, quote unquote, who takes more of a, I guess, like, liberal view on abortion, where he says, like, he wants it banned post 12 weeks. And that's not something that most people on the right would agree with. They would want it, you know, banned all the way back to, I mean, you know, just a blanket ban except for, like, the life of the mother. And Dave Rubin doesn't do that. But Dave Rubin's position compared to the modern Democratic left and compared to what many states have on the books is a lot better than what we have now. So I don't know. I don't want to make the perfect the enemy of the good. And I think you're going to see, obviously, left-wing states have much more open, lax abortion laws than right-wing states. But I do think, in general, we're going to see a general trend in the direction of more restrictions, at least post 12 or post 15 weeks regarding abortion. And I think some of that will be good. You know, I am somewhat concerned about maybe some of the excesses or some of the potential pitfalls that could come into play there in terms of handing the government power that we don't want. Because it, you know, the further back you go, the more we're begging the question in terms of, like, well, if you ban abortion, let's say at like 6 weeks, how do you enforce that? Because a lot of the abortions happening at 6 weeks are just done with a pill. So you're going to create a black market of abortion pills, and you're going to create an incentive structure where the way to enforce a ban on abortion at that time is a war against abortion, similar to a war against drugs. And you'll have, you know, kind of like a snitch culture, and you'll have, you know, an increase in the surveillance state, and because it's one thing to, you know, search people's cars for drugs, but it's another thing, you know, when we're talking about abortion, it's like now we're opening up the door for things like miscarriages and pregnancies to be, you know, highly scrutinized and highly regulated by the state. And even if it doesn't go completely dystopian, it's just not something I'm super comfortable with. And that all, you know, and I'll make every caveat with that I'm, you know, abortion is a moral abomination. And I'm not, you know, I'm not like one of those libertarians who would be like, you know, triggered or morally outraged at the idea of like a state government banning abortion the whole way back to the minute of conception. You know, there's no way out. You know, abortion at 1 week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks is instantly illegal. You know, I'm not morally triggered by that in a way that some libertarians would be. And I hate this issue because it's like, people want to confuse rhetoric and praxis, right? And it's like, my praxis will sometimes be confused to mean that my position is the same as like a pro-choicer or the same as maybe like a more stereotypical libertarian who is against the government banning abortion. But the problem is I don't carry water for that rhetoric. I don't carry water for like the, you know, the woman's right to choose, and, you know, it's the woman's right to own her body and control her medical decisions. It's like I don't believe in any of that. I believe abortion is morally reprehensible, but I just don't want to confuse like moral ontology, I guess, or moral rhetoric with, you know, moral praxeology in terms of like, you know, we've established what is right and wrong. Then a conversation has to happen about how do we solve the problem? And that's the way I look at it. And people often want to like make those conversations the same thing, and they're just not. I lost my screen here. Give me a second. But yeah, I didn't put the comment up. But yeah, that was the question there. What, in your opinion, what will the abortion laws look like in 5 years? And how do you see the election going this year? I would say I haven't done enough following trends in enough states to really honestly answer that question. I think there, insofar as I can tell, there's a lot of states where people are being given two really crappy options. Like here in PA, for example, it's like, you know, like I know like with our Senate election, it's like Oz or Fetterman. And then you have like for governor, it's like Shapiro or what's his name? I can't remember the name of the other guy. Matriano. Just like no one's excited about. I think, and I don't think this is true in every state, or it could be. I just haven't looked into every state. It seems like there's so many states where people are just like no one is really like the candidates on the table are not galvanizing the bases on either side. That's kind of like my gut reaction to the little that I have seen. So I really don't know. I think the problem is when the Republican base is not galvanized to vote. Studies have shown that, statistically speaking, the Democratic base just shows up to vote on average more than the Republican base. So in the areas where the candidates just both suck, you know, I mean, hopefully the Libertarian Party can make some noise and have, you know, candidates that cover the spread or that, you know, maintain ballot access and, you know, maybe you know, make some rhetorical ground and win some people over. But in terms of who's going to win the two parties and if we're going to have a red wave or you know, a blue surge, I think my worry is that, you know, Roe being overturned is still enough of a galvanizing rallying cry to galvanize the left. And if you don't have a really strong candidate on the right in different positions in these states, that I worry that the Republican base isn't going to be motivated enough to show up in force to do much. I mean, if I had to guess, I would say we're probably going to maintain some kind of, you know, equilibrium between the two parties in terms of the the legislature and the legislature in Washington and in individual states. It's, you know, again, I don't know enough to know each individual state's specific candidates. So, but of the states that I have seen, it does seem to be like, you know, both candidates suck, and that tends to favor the Democratic Party. You know, as far as the studies I have seen. So, going back to Twitter here, let me scroll down and see what news I've looked at and responded to. See, this was Tulsi, and so here's one. Dave Smith back on, this was a couple weeks ago. I forget who he endorsed. He endorsed a Republican candidate. Was it in Colorado or I forget what state it was. And obviously he's been in support of DeSantis in Florida. And so he made a tweet, which got a lot of pushback from people within the LP. He said, "I joined the LP and will still support Liberty Republicans. I'm not the only one. Maybe you need to hear that." He said this to Hector Ruth, because he said, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but libertarians don't join at LP National to support Liberty Republicans." You know, maybe I'm going to screen share this, my Twitter profile, because it just might help. I forget how you do screen share on StreamYard. Give me a second here. Camera, virtual background. How do you screen share? I know how to screen share on Zoom. I don't know how to screen share on... It's been a while since I've done it on StreamYard. I'm not going to waste too much time trying to figure it out. I can't remember it. If someone in the comments knows how to do it on StreamYard, let me know. I'm a boomer with technology sometimes. But yeah, it was Hector Roos for Florida and Governor at Roos for Florida saying, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but libertarians don't join LP National to support Liberty Republicans." And then Dave said, "I joined the LP and I will support Liberty Republicans, and I'm not the only one." And I got to say, I strongly strongly agree with Dave here. And, you know, I don't know enough about this other Republican candidate that Dave has endorsed to know if I would agree with him on that endorsement. So I'm not going to go so far as to agree with Dave, you know, on every endorsement he's made, but just the general concept of, you know, endorsing Liberty Republicans. I mean, I think to play the libertarian third party game and just play it the same way that the old regime did just makes no sense. If you're going to play this game, I think that you need to be strategic about it. I think you need to decide on a case-by-case basis, whether it's a federal election or a statewide election. I think local elections, there's not many instances where you're not better off supporting the Libertarian candidate. But even there, I think you need to just be open-minded on a case-by-case basis, you know, as to what the best move to advance liberty is. Again, I've said this before, but the Libertarian Party, you know, the old regime used to say the point of the Libertarian Party, the goal, the mission is to elect libertarians to office, to run libertarians for office and to get them elected to office. And I still strongly disagree that that is the goal. To me, this is confusing the ends with the means. The means or the praxis of the Libertarian Party in terms of like the, I mean, to use an analogy here, it's like, what is the ends and what is the means of Batman, right? Let's use Batman for an example. So to say that the purpose of the Libertarian Party is to run candidates for office to win public office is like saying that the purpose of Batman is to throw batarangs at people and to use his grappling hook to, you know, maneuver around the city. Like, no. That's not the point of Batman. The point of Batman is that he's trying to stop crime, is that he's trying to protect innocent people from criminals, and he's trying to punish criminals to make his city a safer place to live. The point of the Libertarian Party, then, is not its means. It's not, you know, the means of the Libertarian Party is running people for office. I would say that that's one of the, you know, sort of tools in the utility belt. Like, Batman has his utility belt, right? You know, it's he's famous for that. He's got his batarangs, he's got his grappling hooks, he's got, you know, all sorts of different gizmos and gadgets in it, and I view the Libertarian Party kind of the same way. We can run people for public office, we can use our official party status and, as you know, at the national and state levels and even the county levels to put out a message into the public sphere, you know, whether that's through social media or through the press or by taking the streets and engaging with the community. I think that, trying to think of what other things the Libertarian Party can do, I think that the Libertarian Party can educate through, you know, funding different endeavors and campaigns that are more not like political campaigns trying to get someone elected, but like pushing issue campaigns. And I think that the new leadership has done a good job of that on things like Defend the Guard and cryptocurrency and whatnot. And so there's a lot of different, you know, tools in the utility belt of Batman and the Libertarian Party. But you don't describe the purpose of the party by describing the means. No, the means go towards the end. The purpose of the Libertarian Party is to advance the cause of liberty. It's to help increase liberty and the knowledge of liberty and the number of people who are either liberty leaning on certain issues at the very least, or who are libertarians. That's the goal of the Libertarian Party. And so that means just like Batman has to, you know, know what tool to use in each given situation, Libertarian Party needs to, with every situation, decide what the right course of action is. And I'm sorry, but like, if Justin Amash was still running for Congress today, despite me having some very strong disagreements with Justin Amash, it would be stupid to run a Libertarian against an LP candidate against Justin Amash. Just like it'd be stupid to run someone against Massey, or if Ron Paul was still in office. I've had mixed feelings about Rand Paul, but I think even there it would be stupid to run someone against Rand Paul. I think it'd be stupid to run somebody against Tulsi Gabbard, even for her flaws, if she was running for, you know, Senate or, you know, some sort of statewide position. So, yeah, I think Dave's 100% correct on this. And it's really frustrating to see people within the Mises Caucus sphere who were just kind of parroting the old talking points of the old guard. And, you know, I think we need to be better than that. I think we need to be more sophisticated than that. So we're already at an hour. But I'm going to go a little bit longer just because I have a little bit of time here. Oh, something just popped into my head. People in the Mises Caucus hater sphere keep on going on with this narrative that the Mises Caucus people were booing Mises at Reno because they had never heard or read Mises, which I think is a disingenuous take, just to cover that quickly, because one, it's kind of like, all right, although there were a lot of Mises quotes that were read there, it's still, in the grand scheme of things, the amount of content of Mises that Justin read is like a drop in the bucket of a, no, it's like a drop in a ocean compared to all the things that Mises has said in all of his different books and writings. And to act like, if you're going to say, we love Mises and we named our caucus after Mises and we advance the economic teachings and political teachings that Mises found, to act like that means that we 100% agree with everything he ever wrote and that there wouldn't be things that we disagree with is silly. And I also think that many of us were booing their quotes knowing where Justin was going with that. I mean, as he was reading that, I know I knew. I was like, oh, these are Mises quotes. And yeah, I disagree with them. And I think Justin's point was even, I disagree with some of them. And I think Justin's point is actually being completely disregarded by the people who are just like possessed with this, you know, Mises Caucus derangement syndrome, where they essentially, what Justin was saying was, let's not, like, you know, demonize people or refuse to work with people just because we have disagreements with them. And it's like, I think Justin was kind of saying that to everybody and also kind of about himself. Like, listen, you might not agree with me on something, but if we're going to define libertarianism so narrowly that like I'm not a libertarian, that like Justin Amash isn't a libertarian, he's like, then we're in trouble. And he's 100% right. He's 100% right. I thought his speech was fantastic. And, you know, to act like everyone in the Mises Caucus was triggered by his speech is just, you know, I want to call it propaganda, but propaganda almost implies that these people have power to influence the conversation, and they really don't, but it's still just a really annoying false allegation and sort of like, you know, revisionist history that I see going around all the time, and it's just nonsense. So that has popped into my head. I don't know how many states are Mises Caucus right now, but I think it's around 2/3, but I couldn't say for sure. Let's see. Do a couple more tweets or questions here. Oh, I don't know if Mr. Brady is still here, but I'm going back through my timeline and seeing a disagreement we had that we never actually fully hashed out. But it looks like he deleted the tweet, so maybe he changed his mind. This kind of goes into what I was just saying about Justin Amash, but it's just like, listen. I'm obviously an anarchist. I mean, that's why, like, my Twitter handle is Biblical Anarchy, right? And I do believe that. I want to be clear about a couple things. I do believe that anarchy is the consistent form, you know, the logical end of libertarianism. And I also think that we need to be careful to, like I was saying before, not fall into, mistakes that the old guard of not just the Libertarian Party, because I don't want to make this podcast just always about the party, but I think the party is often representative of the movement sometimes. And I think the movement has struggled just as the party has in terms of voices being out there who I think oscillate between two extremes that are both not helpful, right? Because we have, on one hand, people who go like double down on being super pragmatic and watering down the message and trying to appeal to the middle. You know, I mean, it's like the meme of fiscally conservative and socially liberal, right? And I think that is not helpful, obviously. I think that to say that all, you know, to define libertarianism in such like vague sort of centrist, lukewarm ways is detrimental. It doesn't inspire people. It doesn't actually communicate anything that's going to make someone really dig deep into the issues that matter. I refuse to believe that, you know, I mean, maybe it exists, but it's got to be the rare exception that Gary Johnson inspired anyone to look into like Austrian economics, or inspired anyone to look into the Federal Reserve or monetary policy, who inspired someone to look into the reasons why, 9/11 happened and the years of military interventionism and regime change that led up to that, and our role in inspiring, the violence that has happened in the Middle East. And, you know, I think people in the Mises Caucus crowd tend to, you know, agree with me on that. I think another danger, though, is going too far in, like, the opposite direction, where we're just, like scorched earth, pure radical anarchist libertarians, and we're almost, like, you know, it's like on one hand, you have people who will scream fiscally conservative and socially liberal until they're blue in the face. And then on the other hand, you have people that, like, you know, any conversation just boils down to taxation is theft and, you know, the state is illegitimate and it needs abolished. And then it's like, okay, but this, you know, people are going to have their reaction to the statement, and then they're still going to have questions about all these different things in society that they would want to know how they would work without the government. And although I definitely think that the moral argument is important, it can't be all we have. And I think that my concern is not so much, I don't want to divide in the movement. If we're talking about like dividing lines, I don't want to draw dividing lines, and ostracize people based upon if we're anarchists or we're minarchists. And I think that even includes people who would fall under the umbrella of classically liberal. I think that we need to have more allies in this movement. You know what I mean? I think libertarian movement needs to be as big as possible while maintaining, you know, a core of what libertarianism is. And, you know, that core being private property rights, the non-aggression principle, and limited government. And I think, you know, I think we all tend to agree on private property rights and the non-aggression principle. You know, we all have kind of maybe different views of what limited government looks like. And I obviously think that I want polycentric, you know, full market anarchy government. And I think that's the best form of limited government. But there's some people who think, no, we still need monopoly government, but we need it to be at least, you know, to small localized geographical areas where that's more feasible and that people have more choices rather than, you know, a giant one that sits over 330 million people. And then you have some people who would go, yeah, we need decentralization, but we also need checks and balances and really something like the Constitution, you know, maybe with some changes in hindsight of where the Constitution went wrong, you know, is a better form of limited government. And that's kind of more like what a classical liberal would say. I have disagreements with the minarchist and the classical liberal, but are we moving the ball of liberty forward if we divide over a disagreement over, you know, put it this way, right now, the separation we have as anarchists between, you know, anarchism and minarchist's position, and then the minarchist and anarchists and the classical liberals is infinitesimally small compared to the giant gap between all three of those and the status quo, all right? I mean, radical, like consistent classical liberals and the way they want to go back to the Constitution and actually adhere to it, that almost would look like anarchy to your average statist or your average, you know, Republican or Democratic politician today, right? So it's like, you know, we're not going to have anarchy all at once tomorrow. I'm not going to have minarchy all at once tomorrow. We got to start somewhere. And so I don't want to confuse the moral argument with, you know, with praxis again. And I don't think it's a division between the classical liberals and the minarchists and the anarchists. Rather, I think it's a division between people who are red-pilled and people who are blue-pilled, for lack of a better way of explaining it. Because I think some people I know people who are anarchists who hate the Mises Caucus and who you wouldn't know they're anarchists because they water down everything. And they're way more... It's like, put it this way, there's some people who stand on principle first and try to boldly tell the truth, kind of like in the way Ron Paul did, and to convince people through moral and empirical argumentation of why the government is screwing up in either X, Y, or Z area and why we need to go to more of a free market, limited government society. Then you have some people who seem to, you know, this is kind of more like what the old regime did, where it's like, oh no, people are already, like, everyone's a libertarian, and we just have to, like, convince people that we're just like them, and almost like, you know, just trick people into voting libertarian, and let's not scare them off with radical stances that, you know, that aren't popular. It's sort of like, you know, it's almost like that's way more of that is a huge issue to me. And I would rather side with a red-pilled classical liberal than a blue-pilled anarchist any day of the week. So, you know, to all my Mises Caucus friends and acquaintances, I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as you journey forward, is to not divide over the, again, in comparison to each other, our differences are infinitesimally small compared to the status quo. And we can, you know, let's try to create a society where our differences are big, and then we can hash those out, right? But we're nowhere close to that. And so there's no point in, I mean, I guess it can be fun to have those philosophical conversations, don't get me wrong, but we shouldn't divide on it. It's just silly and unhelpful. It's sort of like Christians do the same things where they're like, this church, we agree with them on opposing this woke ideology that's trying to, you know, drag our children down into this weird secular demonic, woke agenda. But we can't side with them because they believe in infant baptism or something. It's just like, or in the same way, like, you know, some of my Protestant brothers and sisters get really triggered by things that the Catholic Church does. And I'm just like, listen, I have my disagreements with the Catholic Church, but man, right now, I'll take a based Catholic over a blue-pilled statist, reformer, reformed or Protestant Christian, of which there are many. So, I think we need to exhibit some common sense in terms of prioritizing the, not just the issues, but the approach, right? Like, I think the approach matters. And I'm really hesitant to divide over things that are nowhere close to mattering right now. It's like, you know, the minarchist who thinks that we need a monopoly court in a geographic area, whereas I would want, you know, full market governance where you could have competing courts within a geographic area. Neither of us are getting what we want right now. So let's work together. And, you know, if we're lucky, maybe our children or grandchildren can actually have a meaningful argument about, well, should we have a monopoly court in this area, or should we allow for, market competition of legal systems? So I think I'll end there. We're at an hour and 18 minutes. So it was fun to get back into the swing of things here after my long hiatus. I think I'm going to be doing this kind of thing going forward. I think probably Saturday nights, Friday or Saturday nights, I'm going to be doing like an hour and 15 minute live stream for the foreseeable future. Some of it will be Q&As and reacting to Twitter stuff like this. And, you know, some of it will be reacting to articles or reacting to other videos. So, again, if you guys have anything, you know, that you want to submit for me to look at, whether it's like an article you want me to react to or a podcast that someone was criticizing the link between Christianity and libertarianism, or like if it's like Christians advocating for war or something like that, or advocating for some other, you know, statist position, definitely send that kind of stuff to me, because I'd like to, that's the kind of stuff I want to kind of go into on these live streams. So, and, you know, again, the announcements and stuff that are coming up, I'm going to be posting links in, I don't have the links right now while this is live, but once it's, you know, just up in the regular, you know, YouTube form where you can go back and watch it, or if it's on the audio podcast section, the links will be there for you to go to the website and see the announcements. And, even if this is in the future and the announcements have already been made, you can click on it and see what I got going on, because I am, again, really super excited for what is in store here in the next month and beyond that. So I thank everybody for watching, and those of you who were here in the comments with good back and forth banter and questions. I hope everyone has a good Sunday tomorrow. Whatever you're doing, church, spending time with your family, resting, and until next time, remember, Don't fear the fire.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.